Welcome to the Wildcard Hour. I'm Allie Lightfoot. Jadina Lillian and Teocasin Ghost Horse were in town recently for several events to celebrate the publication of their book, Butterfly Against the Wind. This lavish 80-page book includes Lillian's artwork and Ghost Horse's accompanying narrative. We spoke about the book and many other things a few weeks ago at the KVNF studios. Here's that interview. You stated that Butterfly Against the Wind was created to give the cosmology and sacred view of the Lakota. And I'll admit I had to look up the definition for cosmology. It's the study of origin, evolution, and the eventual fate of the universe. That's what cosmology is. So could you talk about that a little bit?
My connection with the Lakota is really through Teocasin, and so through the heart. So I hear about his stories and I hear about his life. And I also understand that there's more of a mystical reality that is very much alive here. The ancestors of each of us individually and the ancestors of this land and from the land where we came from, if you came from another place, and most of us did, all of us did. So it's very important that we know the history, what happened here.
Oh, yeah. The cosmology, I like the definition also, but I think if you take out the word fate and you put into it more of a free will that we cannot be, you know, controlled, fate, whatever it is. And I think that perspective is not deep enough, but I do like the creation and origin stories and, you know, the continuum. If you think about cosmology as a continuum without a beginning and an ending, that's basically cosmology to the Lakota in this way. And, you know, if you understand the balances of what real power is, when Jadina described the butterfly against the wind, is when in South Dakota as well as in Colorado too, there's great winds here. And sometimes you see that butterfly flying from one point and taking all day to get to another point. But the butterfly has really not fought against the wind, has learned to walk with the wind while the wind was trying to say, yeah, let's test your strength. And the butterfly ends up just as powerful as the wind. And I like that balance of it because there's nothing more powerful than seeing what we in our dualistic human mind see. The wind is an all-encompassing power, but yet the butterfly is the one who generates the wind. You see, there's mm-hmm. no disconnection, there's no separation. So we understand it that way. In the cosmology, we think in, because of our continuum thought process, is that it continues in other dimensions. We don't believe things the way the West would believe in just like sort of theory, because theory means theater in its etymology of a show. So when I think about this theory that, you know, we have other dimensions, well, we do have other dimensions, and science is starting to come to a point that, yes, there is something happening out there. We're not too sure because we can't put it in a formula yet. But yet, when you speak with indigenous peoples, they, as I have studied over 30 years, the indigenous peoples have quantum physics languages. And those interdimensional languages are just not starting to be understood a little bit, but we can't do it in a subjective way that we've been doing it with in our sciences. So with cosmology involving all of those ideas that we would put into it by definition goes beyond that. But we do what we can.
You talk about dimensions that are seen and unseen and how everything is connected to the land. And through your artwork, Jadina, you sort of express this through layers, it seems to me. Can you talk about how you used layers and these veiled images to express that?
Yeah, my experience in this world is that the visible world is a one layer that will take us to something that is very real, but it's hidden. And it's hidden behind many stories. It could be the story of our heart. It could be the story of our body, the story of our family, the story of our anger, all these different stories that clutter that place that is of purity and peace that you can actually feel in the land. So my artwork, I want to express as many of those layers as I possibly can, so I can eventually find that space between them where there is peace.
How did you do that, you know, technically with your art?
Yeah, technically, I don't personally work well with the blank canvas. So I work with a photograph. I'm drawn to an image, and oftentimes it's nature. So I have that photograph, let's say, of a mountain, and then I just express what's going on inside. Usually it's very chaotic, it's entangled, and it's just a pure expression of this. But then I have a desire to actually create beauty and to give beauty to the world. And so then I start to design and paint over it and retake the photograph and then paint on it again and retake it and take it. And sometimes I do get to that place between, and sometimes I don't. But every stage of the way is fine, yeah.
There was one piece of artwork that really jumped out at me when I was looking at the images, and it was called Someday the Earth Will Weep. I mean, you really just have to look at it. It's hard to describe artwork, but it just the sky speaks to me in this picture, and the horizon. Can you talk a little bit about this?
Well, you know, I like the way you had described it, which you said it looks like it's a cloud behind a cloud. And I find with nature and many things, it isn't just that cloud. There is a cloud behind the cloud behind the cloud behind the cloud and the endless infinity of it.
Teokasin created the words and you did the visuals, Jadina, and then you put it all together. And I feel like you guys absolutely complement each other artistically. Are you always such great collaborators? And do you, were there disagreements over how to express any of this, or did
Holly, that's just my nature, is I disagree with everything. You know, I'm adverse to authority in any form, because it has to do with the language of Lakota, which is a relational language. And in that language, we don't have a word or a concept for domination. So anything that comes to tell Teokasin, this is how you do it, I'm going to, you know, put up a fight, a fuss, because I'm not that kind. If it's a different thing, if you ask, you know, and converse, then it starts coming out in a way that's complementary to getting along and putting out something like Butterfly Against the Wind. Yeah. So I am always, I wouldn't say argumentative. I want to find out and ask why. Why do you ask that? What, you know, it's not distrust. It's just the way it is for a lot of Native people, because we disagree with a lot of things, right? But when it comes to the beauty of how humans see life as it is, we're agreeable with that, because that's where we all end up. But the thing is, too, it's important to understand, Ali, that is that in that Lakota, and I know you're a pragmatic person, is that in the Lakota, we're not so heavenly that we're no earthly good, because we know everything stems or comes from the earth, Mother Earth, and we'd like to understand it. Then goes out to the vernacular, the heaven, right? So we understand it that way. So, you know, when we want something to grow, we culture it. The idea, the pictures that Jadina paints out, this interview is being cultured. So it may not be what people want now, but it's getting slowly growing as a seed. It's getting to people's consciousness.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk a little bit about the differences between the Lakota way of thinking and the Western way of thinking. And it's very different, you know, and Jadina was talking about how often she's exposed to it a lot because she's with you and around this whole world. Well, why don't you give a couple of examples that you were talking about?
Yeah. And I was telling Allie that this isn't your exact words, but you could say this, which is about life, how, you know, thinking life will take care of me versus how can I take care of life, and how that's vastly different. It changes your whole way of living, actually. One is so passive, waiting, and the other one is actually active, and it actually erases the me. Mm-hmm. I become part of this whole beautiful creation that is the world. And, you know, you probably could go on about that, but I was also sharing with her from the book the word Mahashani, which is, because in Lakota, there's no word for love. And in the book, it says, I can't quote it exactly, but it's, there's no word for love. Love, Mahashani, means there is no beginning or ending. And literally, it means you are my skin. It actually incorporates, right, a way of inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
The way I've learned English was that it's all having to do with time and measurement and weighing and subjective and objective. And in Lakota, in the older languages, not the newer Lakota, because we had to change it in order to describe what materialism was. So when you go back to the older language, you can speak Lakota all day without saying a single noun. In other words, everything is always alive, active. It has its own meaning, its own memory, its own consciousness, so to speak. And so when you're in relationship with those other beings, that's when it becomes very multidimensional as the language is concerned. But when you put it back into the English, it becomes very hierarchical, very dominating. In a sense, because in the Lakota, we have no concept or a word for domination. So it erases all that king and queen, heavens up there and hell's down here type of duality. It actually takes you out of it and allows you to go out beyond the box of duality and say, there's no right and there's no wrong. So therefore, we think is a lot of indigenous peoples or native peoples think in space. And space can swallow up time. And so it really doesn't matter. So and when we say that we have no word for love, we do now because of the subjectification of the language. Oh, love means this, the way it's described through Western eyes. But when we understand it in our language, that is really truly no beginning and no ending. And that's what a word for love would really be if we had to describe it. Because it's more than just the anthropocentrism that we have as humans. It goes into other beings and other places, and then we feel that. We just don't believe it. We know it exists, and there's no division, so we don't even have a word for division. You know, you think about the word, it means to divide the vision, right? And we're not thinking. We see visions all the time, not so much that you're doing a Harry Potter on somebody or anything like this. It's exactly how it is you understand, you see, you feel the intuitive value of all things that are communicating. Because that, I think, is our purpose here with Mother Earth, is to understand these other languages so we can also understand which way we are evolving rather than revolving, you see. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a longer way to describe what Jadina was saying. Mahashani is really a good way to describe it. Ni means life. Sha is like a gift. Ha is like skin or the covering. Ma is closer. You're in relationship with. So you can put all that those words together and say, Mahashani, you are my skin, because it becomes very, you are my skin. So it becomes possessive, becomes owner, becomes very subjective. So we have to say it that way so it could be understood in English. But if you were to say it very conceptually and metaphorically beyond metaphors in Lakota, it would mean all of those little definitions I gave you for each sound. Ma, ha, sha, ni.
Mm. I think about that a little bit when I'm editing, because, and I think this is a Western way of thinking, and it's how I think at this point, I'm trained to, is that it's a very linear thing. There's got to be a beginning, a middle, and an end. And there's certain things that beginnings have. Beginnings tend to be slow, and you sort of warm up to the idea. And then you know, in the middle, something else happens, and it builds to this climax often. And then you say something happy at the end that leaves people with a good feeling. And there's this sort of formula to how a story's told, you know? And I feel like often when you're talking about Native American stories or ideas, it doesn't always fit that formula.
No, that's really a good way to think about it, because it is that way, and it's only difference, and we have to really understand that it's not a better way or a worse way either way to think. It's just a different intelligence, and there's many intelligences out there, and we become so pareidolic. When I say pareidolia, it means that we want to see human value in everything. And I described it last night as when there's a pancake and someone can see Elvis Presley in a pancake, right? We're doing that human thing. We want that to be value to us. So that's another form of anthropocentrism. And I think that's part of what we have to look at, because how we are treating the earth is very anthropocentric, right?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of that, I noticed that you're referring to Earth as Grandmother Earth instead of Mother Earth.
Yes. If you understand it the original way, that Grandmother Earth is, mothers become old too. And Mother Earth has been around to become a grandmother. She's seen generations and billions of years. So she's getting old and she knows what she needs to do. She's doing what's required. We understand that humans want to see everything to do their best, but now she's doing what's required. She knows what is needed to keep her alive and the upcoming generations. So when we look at the word mother, we also look at Unchi. Unchi is grandmother, but when you say Makha, which is an original word for mother, which took us a while to translate, Makha means when you pick up a piece of dirt or earth or soil. We can't call it that in our language, but we can call it, this is who we used to be. So we understand that's what Earth is. And people say, how did you know that without microscopes or anything? Meaning that there is life in that piece of dirt or earth or maca that you can put under a microscope. And you see all the little bugs and organisms crawling around. And how could we see that? How could we know that? And that's what we call Mother Earth, who we used to be. So the origin story goes that when we came here, we needed to speak to the wise ones, because we didn't understand the movement or languages of this earth, this star, this being. And so we would come and we ask the plants and how they taught us their language. In other words, their wisdom, because they were older than us. We know in the Western world, we say that the humans are the last to be made, were the supreme beings, were come from monkeys or Adam and Eve, and we're put here and we have the intelligences of technology and science and art and music. But it goes further to say that the West, in this way of thinking, that we are the most intelligent. But in the Lakota, we say, yes, we also think that way too, that we are the last, we're the youngest and the newest. But we're totally the opposite, that we are the most intelligent. We also say that we're the most ignorant. So we look to the wise ones, and that was Earth. And we still do that today in our ceremonies and our language, referring to a more natural cosmology, if I may say that, which is a very dimensional language. And if you understand the languages of the trees, of the rocks, of all these beings that are there, you understand what's about to happen next. So when you talk about the cosmology, we understand why, when you came back to, you know, the fate of the world, we also understood, well, the words are in there, the fate of the world. Are we paying attention to the oldest elder, which is Mother Earth, who has become a grandmother now? And it's our way that in the Lakota, the elders in human or any form are actually the future, because they go out into the future. And that's why a lot of Native people listen to the elders. We listen to Mother Earth. She's telling us what to do, when to do it. And because we know she's always looking and caring for us, giving care rather than taking care. Mm. So it's a difference, you know, in how we see that. And it's those little twists in the English language that could say a lot. Like people think in domination forms, I say peace on earth, right? But I'm always saying, no, it's peace with earth. So you're taking out domination and you're putting in there a communion, a united thing going on here, that, you know, we're peace with Mother Earth. And so, you know, and she doesn't have hatred. She doesn't have racism. She's not political. She's not religious. She's not scientific. She may be all of those, but she sure doesn't bring it out in a negative way. Mm. So when we think about Grandmother Earth, wow, what wisdom that is that we are missing, because we forget that we, even in our social structures as human beings, we say, oh, the children are the future. But then we put them away in cubicles in their own room and give them education. And we put the old people in retirement homes, right? And so we're severing our relationship to our future. And so we're just kind of going back about as a lone wolf. And I think that's what we mean by the lone wolf. The time of the lone wolf is over. It's to stop thinking there's only one supreme being, even as a human species, but as even nationalities, I guess you'd say, different peoples from different corners of the world. That's the lone wolf mentality. It's more about inclusion all the time. So yes, Grandmother Earth teaches us all of that. She shows us the evolution, you know, and we see into that sort of the prescience of how she does things all the time. We use it intuitively.
I wanted to ask you, too, about what sort of the concept or word for hope is, because when you're talking about the future in Lakota, looking at Standing Rock, and it just sort of made me think, like, how are these people keeping a positive attitude, yeah. I guess? Yeah. And it just seems like the wrong thing keeps happening over and over and over again. So I just wondered if...
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. I always talk about hope, but to answer it right away, then go back to the origin of the word, you might know, but hope to me is almost like a prophecy wanting, we want to come true, right? But we're only wanting that for the human race. We want things to be better out of it. But when you go back to, as an uncle of mine used to describe hope, it was the last thing out of Pandora's box. Described it in a Western world, and it had to be coaxed out. And it came out of the box of evil.
Hope did,
was the last thing out of the box of evil. So he used to say, so why is it supposed to be good for you if it came out of the box of evil? Yet hope contains all the evils, he said. So I'm like, wow, that is something to kind of go out there and wish for things and even pray for some things that benefit you only. So we get very myopic about our view without the earth, and we get into the language of, I say, conquering. But when you talk about hope, it becomes a religion. You have this irresponsibility. Well, I hope things get better. And then all of a sudden, you just kind of leave it up to somebody else to do what you're supposed to be doing. There's no responsibility in it. So this is why it's difficult for me to use hope. I do get the trendy, most postmodern way is that, oh, let's hope for, you know, of a better president, a better whatever. But that's still a wishful. There's no, it's like I'm losing energy or something and not saying this is the pragmatic way. Without hope, you have to do something. So when things came to Standing Rock, it was that thing of hope that came in. A lot of the, when it first started, a lot of the native, a lot of the Lakota people came in there and they didn't have hope. They actually knew that what they had to do. And they only wanted teepees and they only wanted yurts, something more natural to deal with the great wind there. And this is what they came with. And prayer, in a sense, is not just hope. In the Lakota language, prayer, when we say prayer, wochekia kangapi is kind of another way to say, is that when you pray, you're actually asking for all of this which is already caring for you, that you are actually acknowledging all of this. When I say this with my arms spread, I'm talking about the universe that we understand. So it's all there. So it's not just a single I am praying for me or you. It's also in like water. There is prayer in water, because, you know, you think about what water means is mini. Mini is a word you heard, mini wichoni, in Standing Rock, and it's a Lakota expression meaning mini. Means between you and I. Ni means life, but when you put it together, it means that which carries feeling between you and I. And so you have a quantum physics language there, and hope doesn't fit in that, right? It's almost like we want to control our future without understanding what's going on now. So the seventh generation idea is still within the cultures of Native peoples in Turtle Island, but now we have to remember that it's not that because you are the seventh generation, it doesn't mean you're more special than the generation seven generations ago, because each generation is the seventh generation. So we all have a responsibility of that, and that's why I say hope is not one of them. Is because we know what we have to do now. We have to protect water. We just can't hope to protect water, because that's going to be, we feel that the consciousness is protection of our grandmother, who's an elder now. And what do you do with elders? Do you abuse the elder, or do you give care to the elder? So a long way about it for hope.
If you're just joining us, I'm here with Jadina Lillian and Teocasin Ghost Horse. We've been talking about their book that they collaborated on, Butterfly Against the Wind, and a bunch of other things. The foreword in the book, Butterfly Against the Wind, written by Martin Prechtel. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
And he's a writer and a teacher, and he talks about searching for the indigenous soul in all people. Can you talk about that?
Okay, here's the concept, and in these words here, it's almost like Jadina was talking about. You go back to your ancestors, on and on and on. Think about that in 13 dimensions. Now, when you really come to it, what does other religions and creation stories tell you about their cosmology? How they're created from stone, from water, from air, from light. Those are our truest ancestors. So what are they doing but living in balance? And what are we doing as humans who have obviously gone off out of balance because we don't recognize them as the original souls, 13 souls? So he's coming from a Tzotzil language and how he was taught in Mexico, and his Cree, as he is from Canada. He came into a sense of understanding the beings of how they roll with Mother Earth, and he came to understand that it's the intuitional language leading to consciousness. And so the intuitional language is spoken by these 13 souls, and whatever culture that is, he learned it from, is that he's describing it naturally. Okay, there's the trees. You think about Mexico. What is the 13 major souls that keep things going? But soul is merely a Christian concept also. So he's talking about beings in its own right, their own right, so to speak. So he brings those together. And when I'm thinking about the concepts of ancestors, this is who he's talking about. If you think about what we say, seven people in the West talk about the cardinal points, east, west, north, south, up and down, and basically that's it. But in that language, in a lot of Native languages, there are something like 260 different directions, right? So you can attain this soul in touch, intuitive value from just about anything if you're open to it. And you're not so thinking about self, because that really means there's no separation between inner and outer. It's all the same. So we're in this room, but we're all conversing in the same energy. That's what we're talking about, beyond the material. So I think that's what he's talking about.
And Martin talks about grief and praise, and that you can't have one without the other. And how important it is to grieve in order to have the joy. And so that's one of the reasons I wanted him to do the foreword. Also because he is so much still connected and lives the spirit that is wild, that is not domesticated, that is free. And I know that from his books and hearing him speak. Yeah.
Cool. So. I'm going to have to check him out.
Oh, you do. What's the name of the book, Teocsin?
The Smell of Rain on Dust.
Ooh.
Exactly. Boom.
I know.
like nitrogen, you know, alive, awake, springtime.
Yeah. And every word, you will not put the book down.
Well, thank you so much for coming by the KBNF studios. And I've been talking to filmmaker, artist, and author Jadina Lillian, activist, musician, lecturer, radio host, Teocasin Ghost Horse, to talk about their book, Butterfly Against the Wind.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ali. Dream of the prairies. You are the dream of the forests. The dreams imagined you and manifested you. You are the dream of the rivers, the mountains, and the sun. You are the dream of the prairies, the grasses, the birds, and animals. You are their dreams. You are living in relativity. You're their dream. The only thing left up to you is your connection to them, the consciousness they gave to you. They didn't leave you out. All those uncountable names and beings dreamed you into being. What disconnects us is when we begin to think of self only. That's disrespecting the dream that you are. Someone disconnected themselves when they said, I need power. Who needs power when you have all those that dreamed you into being? You are also mystery. You are that dream, the dream of the mystery.